Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 3, Text Number 6, Krishna's Janam Leela, The Birth of Lord Krishna. Translation. The Kinnaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers. And the Vidyadharis, along with the Apsaras, danced in jubilation. Om and Ganatimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Tvevasmi Tvevasmi Najivami Twayavina Iti Vigyaya Devi Tam Nayamam Charanantikam Vansha Kopadrubhyascha Kripasindubhayavacha Titana Bhavani Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We'll speak briefly about this verse because there's no purport, then we'll discuss the next verse. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you often see names of different living entities mentioned. In this verse, you have the word Kinnara. Sometimes you see words like Kinnara, the Kimpurushas, or the Kindevas. So the Acharyas, they give explanation about these different living entities. And one point we can derive from this, of course, for you it's not much difficulty, but for the scientifically-based countries, or modern scientifically-based countries, Radha Partasartha Bhagavan Ki Jai. The modern countries, which are based on so-called modern science, they have great difficulty conceiving that there's any types of life on other planets, practically. What to speak of human-like creatures. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, we get very specific descriptions of the different types of living entities. So here you have Vidyadharas and Charanas and Siddhas and this the Kinnaras. So Kinnaras are a type of living entity, a type of being that they're called Kinchin Nara. It means that they're a little like human beings. These creatures, these personalities, they're a little bit like us. A little bit like us. A little bit like human beings. So they're Kinchin. It's Kinchin Nara. Nara means human. Narahari. Nrsingadev, half lion, half man. So when you see them, you think, oh, they're a little bit like human beings, but not exactly. Because Kinnaras, they have a human head or they have an animal head. But they never, and then they have a non-human form. The rest of their form is non-human. But they have either a human head, sometimes they have a human head in a non-human form, or sometimes they have a non-human head in a non-human form. It's called Kinnara, Acharyas describe. And then there's a type of living entity called Kimpurusha. This personality, when you see this personality, you will see him and you'll say, hey, Kimpurusha? You will say, Kimpurusha, are you a human being? Because Purusha means man. So you'll say, Kimpurusha, is it a man? Are you a human being? But actually these Kimpurushas, they resemble human beings, but actually they're a species of monkeys. They're a species of monkeys that live on another planet. That's Kimpurusha. So when you see them, you say, Kimpurusha, are you a human being? And then there's another living entity that you see in the 10th canto also, these are described, Kindeva. A Kindeva, it's Kindevas. So when you see them, when you see one of these persons, you say, oh, is he a demigod? Kindeva. Kindeva means, are you a demigod? And what is a Kindeva? A Kindeva is a personality, he looks like a human being, but he resembles the demigods in three features. Those three features are that he doesn't get fatigued. He has no fatigue, never gets tired. He has no sweat, his body doesn't sweat, and he has no bodily odor. It's called a Kindeva. So these are some symptoms of the demigods. And these Kindevas, they live on other planets. They don't live on this planet, but they live on other planets in this universe. They're a type of, like, human being, human species. They're not demigod, they're like demigod in some ways. So you have Kindevas, Kimpurushas, and you have the Kinnaras. Just some small description. And what it does for us is that it very much reinforces the conception that there's all varieties of living entities throughout the universe. There's all kinds of human beings, because we hear in the Padma Purana that there's 400,000 species of human beings. Charlex. So you might say, what does that mean? Does that mean that Punjabis are one species, and Maharashtrians are another species, and Bengalis are another species? So that's three species. And then you have people from Tamil Nadu, that's another species, and... No, not exactly. Maybe you think like that. It's not like that, but this is what it's speaking of. Different kinds, these Kinnaras, and these Kimpurushas, and Vidyadharas. Vidyadharas, they have human form, but they have wings. This is what the Bible, they talk about angels. So they live on a planet slightly above the Earth planet. Just above the Earth planet, there's Vidyadhara Loka. It's like heavenly planet, something not so far away. And they have human form, but they have wings, Vidyadharas. So in the Bible, they talk about the angels flying with wings, or you go to heaven. They say, oh, you go to heaven. The goal of Christianity is go to heaven, get a pair of wings, and fly around. How do you say it like that? So that means that their conception is Vidyadhara Loka. Because in Vidyadhara Loka, they have these wings. So all these types of living entities are there, and they comprise the different species of human life. So now text number 7 and 8. Translation. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood. The clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in a dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon. Because Devaki was of the same category as Sri Krishna. Purport. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, verse number 37, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavita Abhis Tabir Yeva Nicha Rupataya Kalabi Goloka Eva Nivasat Yakilatma Bhuto Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Vajam. This verse indicates that Krishna and his entourage are of the same spiritual potency, Ananda Chinmaya Ras. Krishna's father, his mother, his friends, the cowherd boys, and the cows are all expansions of Krishna, as will be explained in Brahma Vimohan Lila. When Brahma took away Krishna's associates to test the supremacy of Lord Krishna, the Lord expanded himself again in the forms of many cowherd boys and calves, all of whom, as Brahma saw, were Vishnu Murtis. Devaki is also an expansion of Krishna. And therefore this verse says, Devakyam Devarupinyam Vishnu Sarvaguhasaya. At the time for the Lord's appearance, the great sages and demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers. At the seashore there was a sound of mild waves. And above the sea there were clouds in the sky which began to thunder very pleasingly. Everything is personal in this universe. There is nothing impersonal except the way in which we relate with the universe. The way we relate with other people, or we relate or interact or treat our friends and relatives may be impersonal, but every single feature of this universe is personal. It's explained that this human body that we have is actually controlled by different personalities. There are different devatas. There's a devata, there's a person, just like we hear, there's 33 crores of devatas, 33 million demigods. So there's one demigod in charge of the eyelid, holding the eyelid up. That is his function. So, of course, the devotee who lives his life in accordance with the will of the Lord, these demigods are very agreeable towards him. And they don't give too much disturbance in the terms of the body for the devotee. But the non-devotee, they have so much disturbances because the demigods aren't pleased with their activities. But every single feature, wherever there's movement, wherever there's some movement, there must be a person, ultimately. If you examine the atom, if you look through an electron microscope, you can see atomic particles, electrons and protons and all these particles inside the atom. And they're moving. They're spinning this way. And the scientists, they will say, oh, this movement of subatomic particles is caused by atomic wind. There is wind in the atom. Inside the atom, there is wind, hawa, blowing, and it's moving these particles. But we understand that actually inside every atom, adantarasta paramanu chayantarasta, Brahma prays Andantarastha Pramanu Chayantarastha. He stands situated in the Anu, situated in every atom is Krishna. Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So he, Krishna is within the atom, and he as the person, as the Purusha, Purushottam, he is moving by his direction, by his will. The protons and neutrons and electrons are all moving in their orbits in the atom. Now if you go to the macrocosm and look at the planetary systems, the nakshatras and the grahas and all these different universes, they're also moving. Earth planet is moving, the sun planet, all the planets are moving in their orbits. And who is moving them? Shirdakshay Vishnu is moving them. There's a super soul inside the atom, and there's super soul in the universe. So in our body, also the super soul is there. He's moving the blood, he's moving the life air, he's doing everything. With the assistance, he employs different demigods to work for him. Just like in a factory, a man owns a factory, but he ultimately the factory is moving because of the owner. Tata Steel is moving because of Mr. Tata. But then he has so many agents that are moving under him, delegated authorities, representatives, general managers, executive managers, etc. But he is the original, the moving cause is him. He's the cause of all causes, is Tata. If he decides to close the factory, everyone's out of work. So he's the original mover. So the original mover is Krishna, and all the demigods move on his order. So in this way, we're hearing that the description of Krishna's birth, we're hearing that the clouds are rumbling pleasingly, the Meghvani, they're making nice sound, and the ocean waves are rumbling and making nice sound, they're producing music, and the devatas are showering flowers, and the vidyadharas and charanas are dancing and they're singing, the apsaras are singing and dancing as they always do so expertly. So we see that even what we call nature, or the elements of nature, bhumi, rapo, nalo, vayu, actually they're personal. The elements of nature are simply the shaktis of the Shaktiman. The Shaktiman, who is the personality who is delegated to control those elements, he's a different demigod. Fire seems to be energy. We see Agni and we say, oh, this is energy, this is Shakti, potency. This is simply Agni, fire. But actually Agni is simply the expression of the energy of the Shaktiman, of Agni Dev, the demigod or the person who is put in charge of the fire. That's why it is told in Vedic culture that you should not blow a fire out. If you have a candle, like in Western culture, it's your birthday, they put so many candles. And they say, oh, happy birthday, now blow out the candles. And you blow out the candles. But in Vedic culture, you never blow out a flame. You wave your hand, your right hand. Why is that? Because we don't consider, oh, this is just impersonal energy, this is an impersonal fire, this is simply fire. So we just blow it out. Because your mouth is very contaminated. And the fact is, when there's fire is there, the person is there. Just like you have energy, and you express your energy. You have emotional energy, intellectual energy, mental energy, physical energy. But that energy is only expressed when you're there, when you're present. So you're the person and you have energy. Shaktiman means the person, the individual, and Shakti means the expression of his will, his power. So when you see fire, that means Agni Dev is there. He's a person, he's personally there. So if you blow on him, it's an offense. It's considered anaparad. So we go like this. Right? We have a candle, we want to blow out a candle, we don't go poof. In the West they take the candle poof. So this is the training in Vedic culture. We don't know why we do things. I don't know, my father told me to go like this with the candle. I don't know why. I go like this. I don't know the Siddhanta, but I know the practice. Why I go like, when there's a candle, I blow it out like this. And once I went to go like that, and he chastised me. My grandfather said, don't blow out the candle, use your hand. But now 40 years later, I understand the Siddhanta. That every feature of reality, because it's expanded from Krishna, the Supreme Purusha, the Supreme Person, every single feature of reality is personal. The floor is personal, the air is personal, the light is personal. But because of our insufficient realization, first of all, insufficient knowledge, because one cannot derive realization without a foundation of knowledge. That's like you can't build a tall building without a foundation. There's no foundation. You don't dig in. You have to dig in the ground several meters, according to how high you're going to make a building. You don't just say, okay, let's build a building and start from the surface. Whoop! your building will fall down. You have to go underground, what they call foundation. So if we have no foundation in tattva, in gyan, this atma-tattva gyan, then we can't have realization, vigyan. So first we get knowledge of actual reality. What is reality? And how it's constituted, and how it's completely personal, and how Krishna is all-pervading, and everything is actually part of Him. And everything is engaged in His service. So here we hear such a wonderful description from Bhagavatam about the personal the personal feature of what we call material nature, or the personal activities of what we call impersonal nature. It's all completely personal. The ocean knows, that Krishna is coming. Who is the ocean? The ocean is a shakti of whom? Who owns that shakti? Who is expressing the shakti of the ocean? Who's in control over there? Who's the adhikarta? Who's the controller there? Varuna. The Varunadev. So Varunadev, he's a person. He knows. Oh, now the Lord is going to appear. So then through his energies, he commands his energies. He uses his energies. Okay, waves, now sing nicely. Make nice sounds. And the waves crash. Because sometimes the waves are very placid. We have an entire ocean called the Pacific Ocean. Pacific means placid, means peaceful. Atlantic Ocean is very much big waves. So if the waves are too small, they don't make any noise. If you go to the Caribbean or to the Mediterranean, or especially Caribbean, you go to these small islands, the waves, they make no noise. There's no singing. They just go, become poof, very gentle waves. So Varuna is saying, you make nice waves, we'll make nice waves to create nice sound. Nice samudravani, some nice singing. So the clouds, they also, the clouds are the energy of Vayu. The Devata Vayu. So he's telling the clouds, because sometimes the clouds go by, there's no rumbling. It's not every time you see a cloud, there's rumbling. All this kind of thing. It sounds like dundubi. It sounds like the drums. It sounds like the dundubi drums. So in this way, we can understand by reading Bhagavatam and hopefully elevate our consciousness and increase our own perception and behavior to become more personal. That's one of the features we realized when we associate with Srila Prabhupada, is how personal he treated everything. When he would lift a book, he wouldn't just grab the book. And whenever he would move something, whenever he would touch something or contact something in this world, he did it with great devotion. Not only devotion, that doesn't mean that he's just crying tears of love when he moves everything around, but rather he's seeing that everything is Krishna's energy, everything is personal, and he's using, every time he moves something, he moves it in the service of the Lord, understanding that Krishna is personally there, and different devatas are there, and it was such a pleasure to watch Prabhupada move different things. He would, the way he would set down his, I was in a couple of room conversations, darshans in Mayapur, and Prabhupada would open his glass case and the way he would put it down on the table. And he would just open it, and just so deftly and so wonderfully, because he had this realization. He wasn't crass in his behavior or crude. And then with what to speak, that's when he was dealing with what we consider impersonal things. Books, tables, chairs, glasses, cups, doors. But they're not impersonal, they're personal. Then what to speak when he actually dealt with persons, his disciples. His disciples and friends and guests coming from Calcutta and God brothers. How sweet, how kind, how personal. So these are some points we can get. When things are adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu, who is residing within the heart of every living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of the full moon in the sky on the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer, it may be said that Krishna appeared in the dynasty which is in the hierarchy of the moon. Therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty wherein the moon is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition, and so by the grace of Krishna, he could appear as a full moon. To welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the waning moon became the full moon in jubilation. So just see, further description of the personal aspect. It was Ashtami. Ashtami means the moon is very small, a sliver of a moon. But yet, Chandradev,
Devata, the person Chandradevi, says, oh, I can't just show a little bit of light. I can't just show a little light. I have to show my full light. Krishna's coming. And he's coming in my dynasty, Chandravamsha. But what about Ram? Ram came in Suryavamsha. So Krishna comes in Chandravamsha, just like Ram comes in Suryavamsha. But when does he appear? In the day or in the night? In the day, when the sun is out. Suryavamsha. And when does Krishna appear? In the night, when the moon is out. Chandravamsha. So then Chandra is thinking, oh, the Lord is coming in my dynasty. I can't show a little bit this Ashtami. I'm big, full, Purnachandra, Purnima. So people say, wait a minute, you know, according to astrological charts here, it was Ashtami. Your Bhagavatam is saying this, but at that day and that time, according to scientific calculation by computer astrology, we can calculate every day for a million years in the past and the future. And it says here that it was Ashtami. We can see very clearly on our computer printout. Your Bhagavatam saying it was full moon. You people is against the computer. It's against the science. It's against science. We reject this Bhagavatam. You devotees are crazy. So what to do? Because their conception, the end result, the net result of modern science is an impersonal conception of reality. There is no God. Or if there is God, it's simply energy, and we can manipulate that energy, and we are even actually more than God. He's simply energy, and everything is simply energy and chemicals, and everything's impersonal. So this is a very nice description of Krishna's, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests before Devaki, naturally he creates a whole personal situation. His appearance is completely personal. His activities are completely personal. Everything surrounding his appearance is completely personal, as we're hearing. So then we walk away from class and we think, well, what about me? Am I personal? Am I warm and friendly and kind and loving and when I treat other devotees or non-devotees or whomever? We come into, just like Chandra, he's saying, Jai Radhaparta Sartagi. Chandra Dev, he's saying, oh, Krishna's coming in my Chandra Vamsha. So we're born in we're now in a certain family. We're in a certain family. It's called a Chuta Gotra. Your Agrawal Gotra is finished. Your Agrawal is finished. This thing's, that one's finished. You know, they're all finished. Your Sharma Gotra, this Gotra, that Gotra, it's all finished. Devotee means Achyuta Gotra. So Achyuta Gotra means the family of personal dealings. Because the founder of our family is Krishna. He's the founder. He's the original member of the Gotra. Krishna, Sri Krishna. And he's so personal. He's a supreme personality of personality. Like we say sometimes, they say, oh, this person, she has a very nice personality. She has a very nice personality, very nice behavior, very nice speech, very sweet dealings, very kind and gentle, respectful, always willing to serve and help, never gets angry, and very wonderful personality. So we're in the family, but then we have to question, well, am I exhibiting the qualities of the supreme personality of personality? He has such a personality. Who has a greater personality than Krishna? So they have an expression that, like father, like son. The son is supposed to take after the father. Actually, takes after the mother psychologically. But at least we have the expression, like father, like son, like daughter, like father. So we should take after Krishna. And then you'll see how you actually feel. Then you experience what it's like to be in the family of Krishna. Because that's what his family means. All personal dealings, everyone that relates with Krishna, all the devatas relate with Krishna in a very personal way. A very intimate and kind and personal way. There's 33 million demigods that are very personal, as you see by this description. Instead of the word deva rupinyam, which is used in this text, some editions of Bhagavatam clearly say Vishnu rupinyam. In either case, the meaning is that Devaki has the same spiritual form as the Lord, which means the Lord has Satchidananda Vigraha, and her Vigraha is also Satchidananda, as ours is. Our form, our original form, our purified form, is also Satchidananda Vigraha. Therefore, no one can find any fault in the way the personality, Supreme Personality of God, had appeared from the womb of Devaki. In other words, Krishna's birth is not material. Namam Duskritina Mudha. The foolish people, they think that Krishna, he has a material birth like me. I have a material body. I appeared from the material body of my mother. And I'm subject to so many limitations. But here it's clearly explained in Bhagavatam, Krishna's body is Satchidananda, completely transcendental. And he appeared, or manifested himself through Devaki, who also had a Satchidananda body. The body was not material. So you can't compare our birth with Krishna's birth. Those who are not in full knowledge of that appearance and disappearance, they're sometimes surprised that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can take birth like an ordinary child. But Krishna, the Lord's birth is never ordinary. What is ordinary about the Lord's birth? Actually, however, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is already situated within the core of everyone's heart as Antaryami, Supersoul. Thus, because he was present in full potency in Devaki's heart, he was also able to appear outside her body. In other words, Krishna's already in your heart. It's not that Krishna's born from, he's not born from Devaki. He doesn't come out of Devaki. It's not that he's not inside Devaki. Then at a certain point he enters Devaki, then 9 months later he comes out. Like us. Krishna's always inside the heart of every living entity and inside the heart of every atom. He's inside the heart, he's inside the column. He's always in, he's everywhere. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, his father said, where is your Vishnu? Oh, my father, he's everywhere. He's in your heart. He's in my heart. He's in the atom. Come on, Prahlad. Yeah, well, he is everywhere. Is he in this marble column? Yes, my father. Yes, he's there. So then, of course, he came out. Sringadev came out. Just as he came out of the heart of Devaki. Krishna's there in the heart. He just decided because of her desire. Her desire was to see the Lord. Her incredible desire was to see the Lord, so he came out. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, he did extreme tapasya with the desire to see the Lord. So the Lord came out of his heart. So you will say that Dhruva gave birth to Vishnu? Dhruva is the father of Vishnu? Or the column in Hiranyakashipu's palace is the father of Vishnu? Of course not. He'll not say that. So Vishnu, in one sense, he doesn't have any mother or father. Krishna doesn't have any mother or father. But when a devotee, when a particular soul or jiva wants to be Krishna's mother or father, then he's already in their heart and he manifests before them. Just like Dhruva, he didn't want Krishna to be his mother or father. He wanted the Lord. He wanted the master. He wanted the possessor of all opulences. He was looking for that Lord. So that Lord came out. Narayan came out of his heart. So that's what's described here. So it's not a birth. Krishna didn't take birth. Just like if we have desire, we have an intense desire to see Krishna and we become pure, what happens? We will see Krishna. Where does he come from? Do you give birth to Krishna? No, he's already there. But because of our maya, we can't see Krishna. He's already right in front of us. He's within us. He's the nearest and dearest friend of ours. But when the maya is removed, just like a man, he can see, but he gets a disease called glaucoma, which is a covering of the eyes, a gray filament. And you go and get an operation and they cut that off. But when you have glaucoma on your eye, everything is cloudy. And sometimes you can't even see, you're blind. You have eyes, but you can't see because there's a disease covering your vision. So we have eyes, but we can't see Krishna because there's a disease covering our vision. So we have to have ointment. We take some eye ointment. Sometimes you get infection, you take eye ointment. So the eye ointment is the medicine that's given in the Krishna consciousness movement. It's the medicine that's given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's giving everyone this eye ointment so everyone can see Krishna. And that eye ointment is prema. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. So Devaki, she had that vatsalya prema. So Krishna came out of her heart. He's always there, all the time. He came out of her heart and said, yes, you want to be my mother? All right. Your desire is pure, totally pure, and selfless, and self-giving. You want to give yourself to me as my mother, so I will give myself to you. One of the 12 Mahajans, Bhishma Dev, says that the Supreme Personality of God, it is situated in everyone's heart, just as the sun may be on everyone's head. Yet although the sun may be present shining on the heads of millions of people, that does not mean that the sun is variously situated. In other words, it doesn't mean there's millions of suns. There's one sun planet, but he's shining.
Similarly, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is inconceivable potencies, he can be within everyone's heart. Yet he is not situated variously. Ekatvam anupashyata, East Upanishad. The Lord is one, but he can appear in everyone's heart by his inconceivable potency. Thus, although the Lord was within the heart of Devaki, he appeared as her child. So Krishna came out of her heart, but he was still in her heart. He came out of her heart as her child because she wanted to be his mother, but he's also residing within her simultaneously. According to Vishnu Puran, the Lord appeared like the sun, anugrahasaya. Ramasamhita confirms that the Lord is situated even within the atom, andantarastha puramanuchayantarastham. Krishna is situated in Mathura. He's in Vaikuntha, and he's in the core of the heart. Therefore, one should clearly understand that Krishna did not live like an ordinary child in the heart or womb of Devaki, nor did he appear like an ordinary child, although he seemed to do so in order to bewilder asuras like Kamsa. The asuras or non-devotees wrongly think that Krishna took birth like an ordinary child and he passed away from this world like an ordinary man. Such asuric or demoniac conceptions are rejected by persons who have knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ajopi san adhyatma bhutana mishwaropi san. Bhagavad Gita chapter 4 verse 6 explains, the Lord is Aja, unborn, and he is the supreme controller of everything. Nonetheless, he appeared as a child of Devaki. This verse describes the inconceivable potency of the Lord who appeared like the full moon. Understanding the special significance of the appearance of the Supreme Godhead, one should never regard him as taking birth like an ordinary child. One should never regard Krishna as taking birth like an ordinary child. This is considered ignorance for one and offensive to another. You're saying in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse number 9, Krishna says, if one understands karma chame divyam, if one understands the nature of my transcendental birth, divya janam, then he goes back to Godhead. So if you understand, understanding means sharanagati. Sharanagati means atmanavedanam. Atmanavedanam means you give yourself totally to that little boy who took birth from the womb of Devaki, or to Yashoda Nandan. You give yourself totally. And when you come to that point, if you really understand, your understanding must produce a result. To say, yes, I understand, yes, I understand, yes, I understand. But there must be a result of your understanding. The result is your action, your behavior. Just as they say, Kshatriyas don't speak, they act. And by their actions, they establish their will. By their actions, they establish their will. Lesser people, they speak a lot. I want to do this, I want to do that, and I'll do this. They speak so much, they do nothing. And their will is never expressed. But a Kshatriya, he doesn't say anything. He acts. He acts, and then when you see his actions, then you understand what his will is. Like he's thinking, I will conquer that king, neighboring king, and take all of his gold and seize all of his queens and maidservants. He's thinking. And then he orders his army, let's go. And he attacks, he defeats that king, and he takes all that gold and takes all those queens. And everyone says, oh, now I understand the will of the king. So he expressed his will by action. You see? Whereas another person will say, yes, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and this and that. And he does nothing. So similarly, if we say, I understand Krishna, I understand Krishna, I understand Krishna, we say so many things, but we don't act. We're not acting in that way. Then we can understand you're not expressing your will. So when one actually understands the Divya Janam, the transcendental birth of Krishna, then he really surrenders. He understands how inconceivable and how wonderful and how great Krishna is. And there's no one else for him anymore. There's no wife, there's no woman, there's no man, there's nothing. Absolute surrender, sharanagati. Then that person who comes to that platform, atmanavedanam, total surrender, he's guaranteed to return to the spiritual world and punarjanamana vidyate, and never take another birth in this world. But we say, yes, I've heard, Swamiji, you know, I've heard since I'm 2 years old, you know, I'm here in India 40 years, I've heard this Janma Leela 1,000 times, I've seen it a million times on TV, I've seen it in the Rasa Leela. I understand it. I understand it completely.
And then as soon as we go home, we turn on the TV and we watch Z television from Sweden, some kind of X-rated movie. I understand so much about Janamalila. But as soon as I get some money, I go on the wrong side of the street. So we have some way to go. In other words, if you understand, if you really understand on the level that's required to go back to Godhead, when I was reading this shloka from the Bhagavatam, your sikha should have been spinning around like a helicopter. And tears should have been flowing from your eyes. Because when Madhavendra Puripad, he heard a verse about Putana. They read one shloka about Putana, how she came to kill Krishna, but because she offered her breast, Krishna accepted her as a dachri, as a nurse. And he gave her the position of mother, as Ambika or Amba, nurse in the spiritual world. When he heard that verse, he fainted in ecstasy and started crying profuse tears and roaring like a lion, "My Lord, my Lord, incredible, incredible." So that's understanding Krishna's lila, his karma. Karma means his janma, and his karma is divya. His divya karma means his lila. But we sit here and we're reading about this birth of Krishna and we're falling asleep. I have to go to work. When is my prasadam? It's late. Be quiet, Swamiji. So we have some way to go. Our desire must be one with Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants, I want. Taratnika. Tadatnika. My atma, my mind, my body, I'm simply moving and thinking and acting for Krishna. This may take many, many lifetimes. But it may happen in one lifetime. It's up to us. How much we surrender. We alone have no power. If we count on ourselves to do it, it will take 1,000 lifetimes, 1,000,000 lifetimes. But if we take shelter of Guru, by Guru's grace, by Guru Kripa, then in one lifetime it is possible. Srila Prabhupada often said, just surrender wholeheartedly, give your life to Krishna, and I guarantee I will take you back to Godhead in this very life. This is the guarantee, this is the contract. Just like you go to some company and you say, okay, what are the conditions? Okay, you work, you do your work, and this is what we'll do. We'll pay you this much money, you get this much vacation every year, this much sick leave, you get insurance benefits, medical benefits, 20 years retirement, full pay, da-da-da-da-da. We have a holiday house in Puri, a holiday house here, there. You can go there and use that on your vacation. Oh, very good company, and you sign. And you're working for them, you're a slave for the next 20 years. You sell your soul to the company store, as they say. You sell your soul to the factory. So we go, we become sold out animals to our guru, as Prabhupada says. Sold out animal, like the man goes to the market. He says, I want to get one bull for my plowing. So he gives some money, he buys that bull. Now that bull is sold out, he's sold, he's a sold out animal. Now whatever the master does, what can he do? The master whips him, master feeds him, the master works him hard, master doesn't give him food, master starves him, he's sold out, he can't complain. He has a ring in his nose, he's sold out bull. So we become sold out, we approach our spiritual master and say, oh, what's the contract? Oh, you give your life to me, you give everything to me, which means you give to Krishna, and I'll take you back to Godhead. I'll make your life enjoyable. I'll make you peaceful. I'll free you from anxiety. I'll show real hope in your life. I'll make you joyful. And you actually realize who you are eternally. You'll actually realize who is Krishna and who you really are. What is your spiritual identity? And how to love Krishna and engage in Krishna's service in a very personal, intimate way in the spiritual world. That's my side. So you want to sign a contract? Oh yes, Gurudev. I surrender. So then you go forward. But to come to that point of desiring only what Krishna desires, we have to hold very fast, tightly onto the lotus feet of Guru and really try with sincerity and endeavor. We have to really work hard. People work so hard in the material world for the company. They work so hard to get those benefits of the company. But how hard are we working to get the benefits the Guru is giving? Because in the company, if you don't work hard to get the benefits, you get fired. You get laid off. You lose your job and no more benefits. So the same thing. If you don't work hard in Guru's service, you get laid off. You get laid off. You get fired. You get demoted. You get decrease in pay. The mercy stops coming. You say, hey, wait a minute. What happened? I got my paycheck, there's only 300 rupees. You're supposed to give me 1,000 rupees. Oh, last week you didn't work very good. You didn't perform very well this week. I reduced your pay. Hey, well, What happened? You know,
no, that's, you have to work, otherwise you don't get paid. So a guru is like that. And guru's mercy is coming like Niagara Falls. It's coming like Ganga. It's coming like Ganga Jal. The river is just shooting out of the glacier. You go to the glacier, it looks like someone has a cannon at Gangotri. It looks like there's a big cannon there. And they're just blasting out this water. It doesn't make any sense. Because the scientists say, yes, the Ganga is caused by glacier melting. The glacier is melting. Well, if a glacier is melting, that means it just trickles down. You know, you have a big piece of ice, you put it on the floor, and you watch it. And it gradually melts, and a little stream forms and goes across your floor. So they say the Ganga is a big piece of ice, and it's melting and forming. There's a Ganga, there's a big ice glacier, it's melting and the Ganga is coming out. But when you go to Ganga, there's a big hole in the glacier, and this water is shooting out at 1,000 miles an hour. It's not melting, in a little trickle. So how do you explain that? Who's shooting out that Ganga? It's just a piece of ice, and the water is shooting out like a cannon. So the Guru's mercy is flowing like the Ganga. But if we don't work hard and we don't surrender and we don't pray and endeavor, then we cut the flow. We put a dam. We put a dam on the Ganga. A barrage, I think you say barrage or something. Put a barrage or a dam. And you say, hey, there's no water. My fields are drying up. What's happening? There's no water coming in the irrigation canal. My fields are drying up. My bhakti lata is drying up. We're also growing crops in our heart. The field of bhakti lata. And hey, there's no water. I'm drying up. Water means guru kripa. So if you cut the supply, then you dry up. But if you surrender wholeheartedly, with heart and soul, to guru and to his instructions, then the mercy comes like the Ganga. And you get so much irrigation, so much water, so much growth, so much fast growth and strong growth. And then you can go back to Godhead in one life. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.